here. So we go here and get, this is dark ice. It's getting it from the null output to null outputs. Okay, we're good. Good evening, everyone. Broadcasting live January 2nd, 2016. With me today is Robin from Connecticut and Anthony from Toronto.
Hello.
Anthony is on our board of directors, aren't you?
Yep.
Who's our board of directors?
Me, Robin. I'm trying to think if anybody else.
Robin is on our... So the three of us, is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the three of us. All the directors are here.
I didn't know that.
Jeff helps a lot, but so far he has escaped being...
He was talking about getting back on the board, but I don't know where that stands right now.
Jeff is in Winnipeg, so makes it a little difficult. But okay, so we have our board of directors here. Anthony is our treasurer. Robin is...
Secretary.
Secretary.
Right.
Because that's what we need. And I'm the monk.
The president monk.
I'm the president. So I thought Anthony came today, so I thought I would invite him up here. We were just talking about punctuality. Or I was. How did this come up? Anyway, my mother was asked me this question about whether what I thought about being punctual, and whether I thought it was important for people to be on time. And I said no. It's an interesting question. I used to really appreciate people who had this sense of punctuality. Like the head monk at Doi Su Thep when I was there. I remember we were going for this, some kind of lunch. And so I was invited and a bunch of other monks were invited. And he said, we'll meet at the, it's at 11. So we gotta be there. We'll meet at the elevator at 11, or the escalator. There's a big escalator down the mountain. And I got there 10 minutes before 11. And the head monk got there about 5 minutes before 11. And then at 11 o'clock, the other monks came in, and he scolded them, and he said, "Look, when we say we have to meet at 11, you have to be here 10 minutes before 11." That's when he. I thought at the time, I thought, well, that's really, I appreciate that. But I think I've changed the way I look at it. I mean, Ajahn Thong was really hardly ever on time, but that goes without saying because he's so busy. But looking at that gives you an example of another way to live. Is you can't really control, and not trying to control. I mean, not trying to control, just doing your best to fit as much in as you can. Wouldn't work in modern society, I suppose. And so my argument with my mother was basically, you know, it's just the way our society is set up, the way we live our lives by the clock. And I think there's an argument for us not really needing to, that our society could have been set up even in the complex, to support the complex systems that it does, without this need for 9-to-5 jobs and meetings and so on. I mean, think of what email has done, right? Email, instant messaging. Like, look at our Slack, that we our communications. We don't need to have meetings for that. We don't have to call people even. Leave a message, and then whenever the person gets the message, then they answer it. It may be that we're even moving away from this punctuality idea because we don't really... I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't live in the world.
Maybe a few years, people will start seeing it as unnecessary.
Yeah.
You never know.
I remember being in Sri Lanka, and it's just incredible that how people who live in the forest, in huts, And we're talking about villagers who really lived in very, very simple conditions. Some of them had dirt floors. And they'd say, like, I asked them, when you come in, they say, tomorrow. And they wouldn't come tomorrow. And this happened again and again and again. And people would say, I'll come there tomorrow. And I started joking that I don't know what this word means. The word in Sinhalese, heta, means tomorrow. So what does this word mean? And the worker said it means, or someone said it means tomorrow. I said, no, it doesn't, because these workers have been saying this to me every day, every time they come. And they never come tomorrow. But it would be the same thing, like I'll see you in an hour, and then 3 hours later they arrive. And really incredible. So it really changes your sense. It becomes kind of surreal, this sense of, oh, they'll be here some nebulous time in the future. You could never really plan or wait for anyone. You just go about your life and hope that the serendipity or the synchronicity of it sort of works out. And so my mother said, what if you have a doctor's appointment? I said, well, doctors are notoriously late. And I was like, well, what was it? What if you have... you have something to do afterwards. Like if I have somewhere to be, and I say to meet me half an hour before that, and if you don't meet me on time, then I'm going to be late for my other meeting. And she said, sometimes it's just you need to be on time. And I said, and yet the world continues to turn. And she kind of laughed. My point being, really, we may make we tend to make far bigger deals out of these things than they actually are. And our petty lives. I mean, I don't live in the world, so I can't say. And I understand that the systems we've set up in many ways require punctuality, but it is a philosophically interesting, or I don't know, it's an interesting question. I think we could all do to be more laid back about time. And certainly, what you can pinpoint is someone who gets angry or irritated or upset when someone is late. They're wrong. That is wrong. Now, you can scold someone. You can do it mindfully. And you could argue that that's important. If punctuality is important, you have to let it be known that this won't be tolerated. But when people actually stand there and look at their watch and fume and so on, that's where the work has to be done. That has to be fixed. It'd be fun to send some of these people over to Sri Lanka.
I used to get really irritated when doctors were late, as they always are. You're sitting there for so long, but now I meditate and I don't mind. They can be as late as they want to be. It's okay.
Changes your sense of time. So, questions?
Yes. Sorry, there's a lot of talk here. Let me just find the first question.
A lot of talk.
I have a private talk tomorrow. What website do I go to video chat?
I think we've already talked.
Okay. Just for anyone else, that you just click on the meet button and click on the actual box that has your name, right? Is that how the meeting is launched?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
For people who are signing up for the meetings for the first time, how do they meet with you? They just click on the meet button and then click on the box that has their name on it? Is that how it works?
No, there'll be a different button will pop up that says start hangout or something like that, call maybe, and then you have to invite me. So far it's working pretty well. Oh, Christopher outlined it. Hey, someone's swearing here. Someone's having trouble with Mara. This some people had their time zone set wrong. That's funny, it would show the time wrong. And then you'll never get the button. Mara.
This doesn't have a question icon, but it seems like a question. I just read a quotation from the Buddha. It said, doubt everything, find your own light. So would it be wrong to doubt the Buddhist religion?
Yeah, that's not a Buddha quote. I call BS on that one.
Yeah, check it out.
Let's check it out. You wanna look it up?
Big Buddha quotes.
Big Buddha quotes. If anyone's interested, go to fakebuddhaquotes.com. I bet it's here.
That's a fun site.
Doubt everything, find your own light. Fake.
Yes, that is a fake Buddha quote.
It's in several books, mostly from the 21st century. 21st century? Like that's...
Very new books.
Very new books. Also found it in a 1991 book. Armageddon the Musical, attributed to the Buddha. Unfortunately, I don't know where Rankin picked up the idea that this was from the Buddha. Find your own light. I miss this site. I should come back and check it out again. What's he up to? Is he still doing this? Yeah, December 11th was his latest one. He's still at it. And he gets such flack from people. People get so upset and say, why are you being so critical?
Well, it's funny, if you see enough memes, you'll see the same quote. It's a Buddha quote, it's, you know, a Gandhi quote, it's an Abraham Lincoln quote. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, Gandhi gets misquoted a lot as well, but not nearly as much as the Buddha, and Einstein. But no one as much as the Buddha, I don't think.
Sure.
I saw another one recently that I'm not sure about, but it was posted by a monk or a bhikkhuni, so I left it. I was going to say, give me a... But it's pretty close to what I remember. What was it? I can't remember. Something very close, and it may just be a different version of it. So. So would it be wrong to doubt the Buddhist religion? Well, doubt is always problematic. Doubt is not a good thing. Sometimes you need, no, not need, but sometimes, I suppose there's a difference between doubting and questioning. So questioning can include acknowledging that you don't know, right? Acknowledging that something is a belief rather than a knowledge. It's the ability to distinguish between that. So that is useful. Skepticism, right? Skepticism isn't about doubting everything, about requiring proof. Skepticism is starting at this might be true and it might be false, starting at a neutral position, not taking sides, and then assessing based on evidence. So when people go around saying prove it, prove it, prove it, that's only useful when there's no evidence to support a claim. So you have to start at might be true, might be false, and then you look at the evidence and see what the evidence supports. Anyway, the point is, I wouldn't use the word doubt. Doubt everything is really ridiculous. I mean, the Buddha would never use that word. Doubt is, anything that translates as doubt is bad. But to question to, and maybe the word question isn't even quite right, but to suspend judgment and to be able to see the difference between a belief and a knowledge is very important. And belief is considered good in the sense that it's powerful. When you believe something, so, and I guess in that sense doubt isn't always bad, but it's always bad for the person. So faith is good in a mundane sense because it makes you strong. When you believe something, it allows you to do it. But if you believe in doing evil deeds, that's actually quite bad, even though it's good. The faith is good in the sense that it gives you the power to do all those evil deeds, but it's quite bad, actually. And so doubt would be the same. If you're told that you must do lots of evil deeds, and then you doubt that, well, that's a good thing, even though the doubt cripples you. It's good that it cripples you, you see. So, the problem there is that if you're just dealing with faith and doubt, you still don't have a sense of what should I have faith in and what should I doubt, and that's where knowledge comes in and wisdom comes in, or experience comes in. If you don't have knowledge and wisdom, then your faith and your doubt are just going to be random or based on your preference or totally arbitrary. But once you cultivate wisdom, then you doubt or you disbelieve things that have no basis, like the idea of God or the soul or whatever, a teapot orbiting the sun. And you have faith in those things that are rooted in experience, like evil leads to suffering, good leads to happiness, and so on.
What is the mind state of Mara the devil? How is he existing in the high realms while being such an immoral character? And is there any hope for his enlightenment?
Did you skip down a lot? Because I can't see that question, but I did see it before. Is there a cue before that question?
5 hours ago, yes.
Oh, did you just skip the other one? Oh, there, okay, I see. Yeah, I see it. Yeah, I saw it before. Right. Mara isn't necessarily immoral, although I suppose that is one way of looking at it. The angels are a weird bunch in Buddhist cosmology. They apparently go to war with the asuras, like really killing each other or something, or I don't know, at least fighting. And they end up kicking the asuras out. This is all legends. I don't know whether it's true or not, whether it really happens. I mean, can't remember ever being in heaven, so can't say what it's like. Well, I suppose it's just as weird, probably a lot weirder than the human world. So, apparently there is a group of Maras. See, the thing about a Mara is, if you notice in the discourses, Mara was often encouraging the Bodhisatta and other monks and other meditators to do good deeds, but to not practice meditation, so to give charity and so on, because this is the kind of thing that would lead them to heaven, you see. And Mara likes that. Mara is a part of the Parinimita Savati. Parinimita Savati, I think. However you say that. I think he's part of those. Which means people who delight or who are happy about the creations of others. So they want other people to do things, to cultivate. Well, they like all sorts of things, to build skyscrapers and to go to war even, perhaps. They just like becoming. They like watching other people. They encourage other people. So they encourage people to follow their dreams and so on, right? Mara is the one who encourages you to follow your dreams and think big and so on. Be ambitious. They like ambition. So Buddha called him evil. Buddha called him, or the, you know, this Mara that was chasing him, evil. But in a mundane sense, he generally doesn't seem to be evil. He seems to just not want people to leave samsara. It's kind of sad for him for some reason when people leave, because then those people are not, I don't know, anyway, they like to encourage people to stay in samsara and to create things.
Apparently we are for their amusement. I had skipped some questions prior, pardon me. My question is, how do you lose Sakaya Ditti without also having shed mana, for example? Aren't both states interdependent in a way? And a little bit more is, how do you become a Sotapanna without having conceit? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Sotapanna has no view of self because they've seen the break. They've seen how everything, and they've come perfectly clear about how everything arises and ceases. But it doesn't really change that much else. Like, they still get angry, they still get greedy, and all of that is based on delusion. So they still have a lot of delusion. And conceit is just a part of that. Conceit is a judgment. Judging yourself is better or worse than other people. It's just like you judge other things outside of yourself. They can still get arrogant, although not so much. They're generally humble, they're generally not conceited. What you might note, that I think the orthodoxy is that there are 9 types of conceit. A person might esteem themselves as better than someone else, equal to someone else, or worse than someone else. And they might in fact be better than someone else. They might in fact be equal to someone else. And they might in fact be worse than someone else. So 3 times 3 makes 9 types of conceit. For each of the 3 beliefs or conceptions and the 3 realities. If you, the permutations make 9. A Sotapanna can only give rise to 3 of them. Meaning, if a Sotapanna is better than someone in some way, then they esteem themselves as better. If they're equal to someone, then they esteem themselves as being equal. If they're inferior, then they esteem themselves as being inferior. Don't quote me on that. It's kind of been a while, and all these details are not really my forte. But Visuddhimagga goes into detail about that. I should really look that up. Maybe that's my understanding of it. So the Sotapanna does get rid of the wrong sort of conceit, I think. But they can still feel good about being better than someone, be arrogant potentially, though not that much. But it's kind of like the same way, how can they get greedy and angry if they don't have a view of self, right? Well, it's mostly considered to be just left over. It's slowly working its way out. It's like the power that has given rise to these things, the power is still there. It takes time for that to work itself out.
Did that also answer about losing Sakaya Ditti without also having shed mana?
I thought it did. Oh yeah, Sakaya Ditti is view of self, mana is conceit. So view is different from conceit. Conceit is just esteeming something. View is actually, there is a self. I believe there is a self. Okay. This is self. wrong conception can still arise.
I have one question regarding sitting meditation. If you are thinking rising, falling as you focus on your abdomen and respiration, you are indeed thinking. But should not meditation be a thoughtless state of mind?
No, there's no reason to think that. Thoughts are a part of meditation. It's the third satipatthana, or it's a part of it anyway. It's also in the fourth satipatthana. So thoughts are very much a part of reality. This is absolutely a very big misconception about meditation, that you should, well, there are many meditations that tell you to do just that, but it's a misconception that all meditation, especially Buddhist meditation, should be thus. Of course, many Buddhist meditations are, but mindfulness meditation, or, you know, meditation to understand reality, which is the core and really the end of the goal of the practice, that you have to take requires thought, both the examination of thought and the response. So mindfulness is about creating a clear thought, because thought isn't a problem, but judgmental thought is a problem. When you like something or dislike something, that's a problem. So we're just trying to replace that with a clear thought.
If you find your mind restless at night, what are some good ways to help in relaxation and clearing the mind and the body for the best rest?
Well, have you read my booklet on how to meditate? I guess one thing I would say is don't worry so much about relaxing. If your mind is awake, if you're restless, then just meditate. Say to yourself, restless, restless, and be okay with it, because the more upset you get about it, the more restless and anxious you become.
Last month you talked about different styles of chanting and how the Sri Lankan style resonated with you. I was watching a seminar on past life memory that was given at a Buddhist conference, and there was a fellow named Damawuran who at the age of 2 or 3 could spontaneously chant in Pali at 2 o'clock in the morning. His foster father recorded some of these chants and brought a monk to verify that it was Pali. Not only did they verify it, they also identified the suttas, and the monk said his style of chanting is no longer around these days. Goes on and on a little more. But the question is, have you heard these chants? And if so, does his style bring out the meaning of the sutta more than any other present chant?
I've never heard this. I've heard of this boy, but I've never heard this. I've never heard his chanting. But chanting is just, I mean, the best is something fairly simple. I don't know. I mean, there's nothing magical about it. It's just words.
I suppose it's quite remarkable that someone at 2 or 3 could recite, you know, in Pali, wouldn't it be?
It's remarkable.
Yeah, I saw a video on YouTube. I'm not sure if it was that particular 2 or 3 year old, or if it was just someone who maybe had learned it, but it was a very small child and he was chanting in Pali. It was kind of cool. It wasn't very long though. I believe that's all the questions.
All right. Anthony?
Questions from me?
Anything to say? You want to talk about any announcements? How's our organization doing?
Our organization has been on vacation for 2 weeks. We haven't had meetings for a couple of weeks, but we'll be meeting again tomorrow to see what the needs of yourself, the monastery, and meditation center are. Did the banner arrive for the 5-minute meditation?
It did, but the things that are supposed to, the clips didn't come with it. So it was like they're in a different container or something, and they're going to be here by the 7th?
Well, there were two options. There was one option for those plastic tags, I forgot what they're called, the plastic loops that you put up, or a rope. So I ordered the rope because I thought the plastic, I forgot what they're called, but you put them up and that's how you put up a banner permanently. And I figured this is a banner you probably have to take down in between.
You ordered ropes. What are ropes?
Rope. An actual rope.
Well, but how do you connect the rope to it?
It's
just a piece of vinyl.
Yes, it has, I think it has holes in it, and you
There's
put
no
the
holes.
Rope. Really? Hmm.
Anyway, worst case, we'll use duct tape. I've got a frame. Yeah, we've got a good frame to put it on. So hopefully that'll work.
When you do put it up, will it be permanently placed there, or do you have to take it down every day or every week?
Take it down, bring it home, yeah.
Yeah, so the plastic loop things won't work. I forgot what they're called, but they hold things up, but you have to cut them down to take them off. I think of what it's called.
Oh, the ties.
Yes.
Cable ties.
Yeah, cable ties. That's not the real name, is it?
I don't think so.
They make that zip sound when you put
zip,
them on.
Zip ties, maybe that's what they're called.
That too.
But like they're not, well, I guess they are for cables.
I worked at this one place and they called them cable ties.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, I know them by another name, but I think we're all talking about the same thing.
Yeah, it's those white plastic things.
Yeah, you have to cut through them when you're done using them.
It's
so
the question
I thought,
of like what attaches to the vinyl or whatever this thing is that we have. There was something about an adhesive option. Something that sticks to them that has a little loop coming out that you hook into. And then there was a grommet option, I think. Grommets were like more expensive, but they're better for outdoors.
Mm.
But I didn't get anything. So like, I think there's another box coming. I hope there is.
Okay, yeah, hopefully that will explain, because as I said, there were two add-on items, either the rope or the ties.
Mm.
Mm.
I don't really need rope. We got rope.
But
okay. I need something to connect it to the thing. Okay, so meeting tomorrow at 12 and 1.
And meeting for volunteers at 1 and for study group at 2.
The admin is at 12.
Yeah.
You're not invited. Robin is. But internet? That
although
one's a secret.
Although we would love to have more volunteers, you know, active in that.
What, in the admin meeting?
Well, at least in the general volunteer meeting, and then for people that are really interested, it would be nice to have more people on the admin team.
That's right.
That's the team that does all the accounting and kind of the business end of...
Maybe people who are more experienced with that would help.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Basically, we do what we do so that Bhante doesn't have to be overly involved in financial matters, so we try to take on all the financial bookkeeping, bylaws, different business aspects of.
Well,
running
it's not just
there.
That. I mean, you guys do a lot of work that I would have, you know, that I could do, but like can't do because I'm too busy.
And
so
also,
nice.
Some of it, you know, is really against the Winnie, right?
Some, yeah, but that's not all you guys do.
Mm.
There's lots of work going on, which is great.
Yes. Thank you, Ryan. Said zip tie, zip straps, zip ties. I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. And or Joshua asking how to join the study group, there's a Facebook page, study group with Yutadhammo Bhikkhu, and that gives the information. Basically, it's on Mumble, an audio chat program, and I'll link you all the information. There's a web page on the website as well, on the sirimangalo.org website, with all the information. But we meet on Mumble audio chat, and we take turns reading the Visuddhimagga. It's a nice group. We've been together nearly a year now. I believe it started in February of last year. Making our way through the Visuddhimagga. I think we're on chapter 10 now. And there's a question. What is skeptical doubt in the context of the five hindrances?
Okay. Doubt is when, as I was saying, when you when you're not sure of something. And that's a hindrance because it prevents you from moving forward with whatever it is you're doing. The commentary, I think, is a little bit less forgiving about it and less general, and it's more like doubt about the Buddha, doubt about the Dhamma, doubt about the Sangha. But I would say it can be any kind of doubt, which is, it's just that doubt about the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha is actually technically a problem. So I was saying you can doubt about bad things, and that's kind of a good thing. Or you can doubt about whether Paris is the capital of France, but it's not really an important doubt. But if you doubt about the meditation practice, well, that's a hindrance, a real hindrance, because it's going to prevent you from progressing in the practice. Okay. That's all. Have a good night, everyone. Thanks, Robin, for joining me, and thank you, Anthony, for braving the camera.
Thank you, Bhante and Anthony. Good night, everyone.
Good night.